Parshat Bo is the real core story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. And there is a passage at the end which is divided into two parashot, in which we're commanded to perpetuate the memory of Yetziat Mitzrayim for generations. And that follows the laws of the Korban Pesach, which itself follows a narrative about Makat Bechorot and about the preparation for leaving. And that itself follows the command regarding the Korban Pesach that particular year. So we just went backwards through the second half of both, from the very end all the way to the middle. And that's what you have on this handout. All the handout is just one thing. It's 51 psukim from Parshat Bo. And there is a relationship that's introduced in this parasha that is introduced three different times, or presented three different times. And it's a relationship between sons and fathers, or more broadly, between parents and children. And it has to do with educating your children about Yetziat Mitzrayim. And so if you take a look when on the first page, in the first section where Moshe tells Bnei Yisrael about the Korban Pesach they are to do that week, or that during those, however long from then, but in that month, he gives them a command regarding interaction with their kids. And you see it in blue, actually in the second paragraph, in Pasuk Chaf Vav. Vayaki tavo el haaretz ashitena Adonai lachem kasher divrei ushmartem et avodah hazot. Interesting side point, which is that the anticipation is that the very next time they'll be doing Pesach, they'll already be in Israel. And then he says, Vayaki umru alechem b'nechem maha avodah hazot lachem. Your kids are going to say to you, what is this avodah, this worship, to you? And we recognize that phrase. Where do we recognize that phrase from?
Rasha.
Mahagadah, and that's the Ben Rasha, the one we call Rasha. And we have several times analyzed, both around Pesach time and also once or twice on Parshat Bo, analyzed the whole section of the Arba Banim and how it plays out textually, where it comes from. And this is the one that we identify in the Haggadah as the one called the Rasha. And that's the answer that we give, but notice that we don't give the answer to him. And what we always point out is the fact that there's no preposition in this verb. Vamartem doesn't say to him, it says say. Make a declaration. And the declaration is a Korban Pesach, because Hashem passed over the houses. And the subtle message seems to be that Yetziat Mitzrayim was not all about happiness and excitement, it was also about death and destruction. And it was which house you were in. And the subtle message underneath that is, had you been there, what house would you have chosen to be in? And Yilvayasham Lohayanigal is sort of the rest of that midrash. We then, if you turn the page, have two other interactions towards the end of the parasha in Perek Yud Gimel. And that is, starting in Pasuk Chet, and what we always notice is unique about this interaction is not initiated by the child with a question or a comment or whatever, but rather it's initiated by the parent, by the father, who is told, you tell your child on that day that Bavur Zeh Asah Adonai Li B'Tzeitim Mitzrayim. And the last time is another interaction, which we look at Pasuk Yodalad Vayaki Shachavin Chamachar Lemor Mazot. So, using the Midrashic model of the Arba Banim, which is one of the oldest Midrashei Halacha that we have, it seems to be, the second son, the one that we had in Pasuk Ched, asked no questions, so we define him as the one who can't formulate a question. And the third one formulates a very simple question, so we identify him as the Ben Tam, or more popularly, although not as well known, which is a contradiction in terms, but more fun, which is the Yerushalmi calls him the Ben Tipesh. You don't hear that too often. But anyhow, and that's the son who formulates a simple question. And what we take a look at this, and we see, okay, there are three different interactions with sons. And the way we would broadly read this is that Moshe is giving instruction and saying, you know, in different circumstances, you're going to have different kinds of kids, and this is how you should respond to them. And of course, in Dvarim, we meet the kid who's sophisticated and is interested and motivated, and the kid every teacher wants to have in their class, and that's the Ben Chacham, Mahay, Dod, Bachukim, Mishpatim, etc. But within this context, we have three, and we're a little bit confused, perhaps, by the sequence, because we would assume that we would start with the simplest one, who can't even formulate a question, then a simple question, then a sophisticated but chutzpahic question or statement. Or in reverse order. Instead, it seems to be mixed up out of any order that seems to make sense. But we see this broadly as three different interactions with three different kids. Now, is it three different families? Could be. It could be that it is one family that has three different kids, and if we want to be Piagetian about it, or perhaps Ericksonian about it, we could say these are three kids who are all going to end up okay, but they're going through three different stages of cognition and of emotional independence and dependence and of identification and autonomy and all of those processes that they're going through, and at different stages this is how you should answer them. And perhaps all three of them are sitting at the same table, and the Chacham is going to probably walk in afterwards so they can all stand up for him. But the other three are all sitting at the same table together, and the father's there and he's instructing them in different ways, perhaps. There are even those who have suggested that we're really talking about educating any child, and children go through different stages. So when a child is at a stage where he is being defiant for whatever reason, here's what to do. When a child is being at a stage where he's clueless or apathetic, or for some whatever reason doesn't initiate, then you initiate. And when a child can only formulate a simple thing, you deal with him that way. I'd like to make a different suggestion. Surprise, surprise. In taking a look at this parasha. And even though these parashot are different pieces, and now we'll summarize them with the text in front of us, I think that the grouping of them, both in sequence and the very fact of grouping them together, really is speaking to a different experience than perhaps we had imagined. The first paragraph on page one is the paragraph that we refer to as Parshat HaChodesh. We refer to it as Parshat HaChodesh for several reasons, chiefly of which is that it has its own Shabbat. The last Shabbat before Rosh Chodesh Nisan, or as in the case this year on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, we have a special reading, take out a special Sefer Torah, and read Parshat HaChodesh. And that's these 20 psukim that introduce the Korban Pesach both for that year and for perpetuity. And the particular practice that year of taking the dam and putting it on the doorpost, etc. And there is no mention in this particular paragraph about educating kids. The kids are included because it's Selavet Avot. It's one lamb for the family, and everybody's included, but children are not mentioned explicitly as part of transmitting this onward. But it's a command in perpetuity. The next piece that happens in paragraph 2, starting Pasuk Chaf Aleph, is that Moshe then transmits that information to Bnei Yisrael, and we presume, based on the Ramban's general approach, that there's more information that was given in that first paragraph than is there, and that is that Hashem also told Moshe, and tell Bnei Israel that when you come to the land, you're going to do it, and tell them to educate your children, etc. And that's the part that Moshe explicates in the next paragraph. Since you're going to come to the land and do this Avodah, and your kids are going to say, Ma Avodah Zot Lachem. Now, let's back it up and ask, when is this all going to happen? And we're going to back it up even further and ask what sounds like a really ridiculous question, but it's not. What do Bnei Yisrael assume is going to be happening that fateful night within 2 weeks? Because they're told, let's say Rosh Chodesh Nisan, on the 10th take the thing into the house and you hold on to it, and then on the 14th you slaughter it, and that night you eat it, right? What do they assume is going to be happening afterwards? They're going to be in the house. Hashem is going to kill the Bechorot to the Mitzrim. We're going to have the Dam on the door, and therefore Hashem is going to protect our houses or skip over the houses. However you read Pasach. And what's going to happen next?
Wake up in the morning.
And what?
Have some eggs.
No, that's certainly not the case.
Go for 3 days.
We're going to go and leave for 3 days and worship God, and then what? And then come back. And come back, however, critically, not come back as slaves. Come back and continue our life as it was in the time of Yosef as free, perhaps elite members of society. And Eretz Yisrael has become something of a Mashiach Zeitin thing. Like, in the future it's going to happen. So what does Moshe tell them? the day will come that you come to the land, you'll do the avodah there. Okay. He doesn't say anything about next year. There'd be no reason to do it next year, or the year afterwards, or the year after that. When you come to the land, you'll do it. So who is your kid who's going to say to you, Ma avodah zot lachem? Who is he?
But did they have to be...
Who is that kid? Who's that kid? He's a kid who's born after the events. He doesn't know about the events. How do I know he doesn't know about the events? Because what do you tell him?
What happened?
And what is it you tell him? Zevach Pesach hu l'Adonai. It's a Pesach offering to Hashem. Asher Pesach al batei v'nei Yisrael v'nokpon Mitzrayim. That pateinu itzil. He skipped over our houses when he killed the Egyptians. Which means this kid either was young and clueless, an infant, or else not born yet. And this is now the next generation. That's what you're telling him. This is a story from my past. And notice that the answer is all in the past. Asher Pesach al batei v'nei Yisrael Mitzrayim. So we're doing a korban. Korban is an animal. You're bringing it to the whatever local mizbeach you have. It doesn't necessarily anticipate a Beit HaMikdash. And the kid is saying, what are you doing this for? And he said, I'm doing it because of something that happened in my past. Maybe even not my past, maybe even my parents' past. But it happened in the past. That's interaction number one. And that's what you're supposed to tell him. Okay. The rest of the text then continues here with the narrative of Makat Bechorot. And Bnei Yisrael end up borrowing or asking or getting clothing and fancy stuff from the Mitzrim. And Bnei Yisrael then the next morning travel and they move to Sukkot from Ramses. And we have a description of what they're carrying with them. They're carrying the matzot because the dough didn't rise. We're ready to go. Ready to go, evidently, with all the fancy clothes, some food, and animals. And by the way, we've left everything else behind because there's no reason to take it. And we're on our way out for this festival out in the desert. We got the fancy clothes. We got the animals to offer up. We got food for the road. And we'll be back in 3 days. That's the assumption. And then there's this interjection, which is the third paragraph, where Hashem tells Moshe the laws of the Pesach. Zot chukat ha-Pesach. In other words, there is a Korban Pesach that's going to be happening in the future times, and it has particular rules to it. But we already heard that previously when Moshe said, when you come to the land, you'll do the Pesach. Okay? And these are the rules of the Pesach. And some of the rules are similar to the rules that we had that night, and some of them aren't. Okay. And then we have the paragraph at the bottom. Hashem turns to Moshe and introduces something that seems to be new. And this one we have to look at together. Sanctify all the firstborn, animals and people. They all belong to me. That's what Hashem says to Moshe. Hashem presumably says a lot more to Moshe, but we hear the other half of Moshe telling Bnei Israel. Moshe Alam Zachor et hayom hazeh. That's the first thing. Zachor et hayom hazeh, which means this is a day that has to be remembered in perpetuity. Which, if you think about it, is a pretty mechudash idea. I mean, we had it in Parshat HaChodesh, but maybe they didn't hear it yet. Which is, in perpetuity, when you remember this day, because Hashem took us out with a strong hand, the strong hand meaning Makat Bechorot, therefore, you're also going to avoid eating chametz. Avoid eating chametz because you avoided eating chametz that day when you left. By the way, they got chametz with them all week here. Right, Chazal say clearly there was no Isser Chametz Kol Shiva that week, but Chametz was only for the day of the Korban Pesach. But in the future, Lo Yachal Chametz, Hayom Etem Yotzim Bechodesh Aviv, and pointing out that this is the time of the year. Vayachiv Yachad Unai Leret Hakneiv Achitim Amayim Parchivim Vayivusir Shnishpala Vatachal Atetlach Eretz Orchal Unavash Vayavatar Tavodah Zot Bechodesh Hazeh. And this is a repetition of what we already heard. When you come to the land, when Hashem brings you to the land, when the day comes, Hashem brings you to the land, you will do this avodah in this month. This, by the way, is one of the two reasons why we intercalate now a month to make sure that Pesach is ba'aviv. The other reason is so that Sukkot is asif. Shivat yamim tocha matzot. Unlike what you had here, for 7 days you're going to eat matzot. Uvayom ha-shvi'cha gladolai, there's a holiday at the end. Again, they didn't have that in the desert, meaning that when they left. Matzot yachal shivat yamim v'le'arelacha chametz v'le'achasor b'chol gulach. Got to get rid of chametz, not eat it, not own it. Is this the first time that Bnei Yisrael are hearing from Moshe about teaching the kid? No, they just heard about it, maybe the day before, a couple days before. What's the difference? So I'd like to suggest here is that this is not three different children, not three different families. I would not like to say this is not the same kid three different years of his life. But let's say this is the same kid, the same point. And it's teaching us an educational process, a sequence. And so I want to take a break for 1 second and ask you, what is the sequence that we go through at the Seder?
Well, from
the Seder starts with talking about ancient history. Something that happened back there to them then. And then we start talking about how that ancient history affects us. God hadn't taken us out, we'd still be there. And then we talk about how that history repeats itself. And then ultimately we talk about how that history is something that we are activating, and then we anticipate that history is going to repeat itself again. And that's Yimot HaMashiach. The Seder takes us all the way from the past through the future, and we're part of all of it. Notice how it works here. First thing that the father says to the kid is, this is something that happened in the past. Let's not label this kid. He's nothing. It's a reasonable question. We're doing a korban. Why are we doing a korban? What's it for? Because something happened in the past. By the way, the kid does not respond to that. For a very good reason, because that's not very interesting. And it's not very meaningful. And the critical part is, there's nothing I can do about it. You tell the kid, this is something that happened in the past. Okay. Azman. So what? So we're doing the next step. What's the next step? Okay, now you sit around and you tell the kid. What do you tell the kid? Take a look in the blue. We got to tell the vincha bayom hahu. And we make a big deal about that in the Haggadah. We say, bayom hahu, ah, yachom bayom. Right? It has to be when? When there's matzah morah munachim lefanacha. When do you tell your kid? When there's something in front of you that you can activate. We're going to eat this. We're going to actually do something to commemorate it. So it's not hands-off, it's hands-on. It's not just the past. It is the present. I have it in front of me. Now, why didn't this kid ask a question? Because he's already bored. Why is he bored? Because the only answer you could give him was about the past. Bored's not maybe the right answer, but he's disaffected. He's not caught in. Because your answer was a historic answer. But you had to give that answer because that's the only honest answer you could give when you're bringing him to wherever you're going, whether it's Shiloh or Nova, or Yerushalayim, to bring your Korban Pesach. What is this? Oh, because something happened in the past to our ancestors. Okay. He's not very interested. So what do? You sit him at the table and say, see this? See this here? There's matzah. There's maror. This is something we're going to eat in order to relive something that happened. Suddenly, the kid's now a little more drawn in. He's drawn in to the point that we get to the third part, which is, Vayaki shalcham in chamacha lemor mazot. Now he's going to start asking a real question. Why will he start asking a real question? Because he sees that he has some sort of a cheluk in it. He's somehow invested in it. Which will help us solve another riddle in here. Take a look at the red and the purple. See the red and the purple on Pasuk Tet. After Moshe tells us that we're obligated to remember and celebrate what we would call the Seder every year. It's not really a Seder, but celebrate it every year. And tell our kids about it. He then says, Vaya lecha le'ot al yadcha u'zikaron b'ninacha. We're going to go back to that, where that's coming from. We should put a sign on your hand and for totafot between your eyes, which means tell your kids, and besides telling your kids, you wear tefillin. And tefillin is going to be part of this commemoration, part of this memorial. Okay. Look at the last pasuk on page 2. What is it? Same thing all over again. Vayala ota yadcha u'tatafot b'ninacha. Tefillin again. Why? What do we tefillin for a second time? But look very carefully and you'll notice this isn't Hashem's command to Moshe. You know what it is? So I'll read it. Starting in Pasuk Yodal, Vayaki Yishalcha Bincha Machar Lemor Mazot. Your kid's going to say Mazot. Gamar Taylav, what do you tell him? Quote, Hashem took us out with a strong arm. The quote's still going. Paro was stubborn, wouldn't let us go. Hashem killed all the Bechorot, people and animals. And therefore, I'm going to offer up all of my firstborn and redeem all of my firstborn children. Is the quote over? Quote's not over. Then what do you say to the kid? You put an assignment in your hand. And for crown between your eyes.
It seems like a non-sequitur.
What is the parent obligated to teach his kid? First thing is, there's a past. Past happened. But you can't do anything about it. It happened. We're happy about it. We're here because of it. But you're not able to impact on it. You're impacted by it. Now, second thing is, we have a yearly commemoration where we're going to sit around the table and actually act some of it out. Matzo moro munachim lefanecha. Here's the food things, the symbols. It's all right in front of you. Okay? And as a result of that, I want you to get a little bit more invested in it. See that it's part of who you are. All you have to do is get him to two words. That's all you need. Get him to two words. The two words are mazot. Let the kid turn around and say, what is this? Why are we doing this? And notice we come full circle. Because we started with makat b'chorot, meaningless to the kid, because it happened back then. And we've come full circle to the kid seeing his father take the firstborn calf and bring it to the kohen. So why are we doing that? Oh, makat b'chorot. But why did the kid ask, why are we doing it? Because first you drew the kid in with symbols and things in front of him, things that he can act on, things that are real to him. Once you do that, then the kid says, mazot. You say, aha, you know what it is? Makat b'chorot. And because Hashem killed the b'chorot all belong to Hashem, and I'm bringing it to the Kohen, and I'm going to redeem it. I redeemed you. You cost me 5 shekel, kid. And what's the last thing you tell the kid? You have to teach your kids. How are you going to teach your kids? You put a sign on your hand and put a crown between your eyes, and what's going to happen? Your kids are going to say to you, why are you wearing that? So let me tell you. The most successful way to make a successful student is turn your successful student into a teacher. When you tell the child you have a responsibility to transmit this to the next generation, then suddenly they're invested in learning the material, they're invested in learning of ways in which they can transmit it further, and then you've locked in the next generation. And that's how Masorah happens. Masorah doesn't happen because you tell the kid, be passive and receive what I'm giving you. It's because you tell him, be passive now, and then I want you to start thinking about how you're going to become an active giver to the next generation, and they'll be passive. And your job is also going to be to generate them to be givers to the next generation. We have a program that we launched this year at the girls' school, the Beit Midrash. Beautiful, Baruch Hashem, beautiful program. And one of the things that we've done, we've already done two of them this year, is we have a Yom Miyun in the school, for the whole school. Right? Special seminar day. Right? For an hour or so in the morning. And the kids are broken up by grade. And they go sit in their classrooms. And our Beit Midrash girls go and they teach in a round robin fashion. So one will go and teach the laws of Sukkah, one will come and teach the Sugya and say for Zachariah about Sukkot, and one will teach some Agadot about Sukkah. And then they go like this. And everybody thinks, oh, we're doing it in order to be able to educate the whole school. Okay, that's the fringe benefit. You know what the real benefit is?
They're learning.
Because when you learn something and know I got to teach it, suddenly you learn it a whole different way. And that's something we got right here. Our job is not just to make effective listeners and recipients at the Seder table or in life. It's to make excited and passionate teachers for the next generation. And that's the way you learn the best. And that's why Rebbe famously said, Habeilam Torah Lamadti Miravotai. I learned a lot from my teachers. Umechavarai Yotem Miravotai. I learned more from my chavruton, from my colleagues, than from my... But mitalmidai Yotem Mikulam. Why? So part of it is because, like Rashi says, the students ask sharp questions to make you rethink it. But part of it is that I know I've got students, I've got to sharpen the way that I understand the sugi in order to be able to explain it to them. That's something my orientation becomes very different. And I think that that's what's happening here. This is not three different kids. This is not a kid of three different stages in his life. This is a kid in 2 weeks, going from Erev Pesach, 2 weeks or a week, from Erev Pesach, where all you can tell him is this is what happened, to the Seder when you can tell him, and here's how we play a role in it, to right afterwards say, and this is now how we activate our lives, and you're going to then activate it further.